All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today's October 16th, 2025. And the top story, the relentless rally in gold and silver. It's continuing this morning. We've got gold around $42.50 this morning. We've got silver between $52 and $53. Now, I have to report a range with prices of metals now, like $52 to $53 for silver, because the prices are all over the place. We've got these pockets of regional dysfunction happening all over the world. Yesterday, we were talking about how in India, there was this hedge fund or a fund of funds was suspending investments because the silver price was trading at these radical, like 12% premiums to the London price, which itself was like $3 higher than the New York price. Different markets all over the world. It's breaking apart. This morning, we're talking about Japan now. Tanaka Precious Metals Group, one of the biggest retail gold dealers in Japan, just suspended sales. Yo, guys, we're not going to sell metal anymore. What? Yeah, they're just shutting down. Or at least they're not selling small denomination bars. I believe 50 grams or higher, the big bars, they're still selling. The rich guys, you can still play. Little guys, you're out of here. Sorry. Good luck, little buddy. What the heck is going on? I don't know, but there is a retail frenzy for metal in Japan happening right now. It's probably got something to do with the recent political developments in Japan. They've got a very pro-stimulus prime minister, was just elected, most likely to become their next prime minister anyway. She's the leader of the Liberal Democratic Party. She wants to do more stimmies, even though Japan is already struggling with the fallout from the last 15 years of stimmies. So monetary policy is getting even more cuckoo in Japan, and people are buying a ton of gold. It's not terribly surprising. And by the way, yesterday I was asking for comments from you guys. Thank you, everybody who weighed in with their anecdata, as I like to say. I was talking about how, you know, in the States, there's plenty of metal here. You go to these shops, there's plenty of supply. But then I'm hearing these stories that don't really jive with what I'm seeing here in the States about retail frenzies, about how there's just no metal available. I heard from people yesterday in Australia, in the UK, and in Canada, all saying they're either having trouble finding metal, in particular, the sovereign silver coin of choice, you know, the kangaroos or the maples or the Britannias, people just cannot get them. And those who can get them, some of the reported premiums were obscenely high. And again, here in the States, you know, not too long ago, you could get American Silver Eagles for $3 over spot. I think those premiums are starting to rise now. The retail enthusiasm for the small denomination physical products is starting to build up. You can see it here, but apparently it's already gone bonkers overseas. So, you know, different pockets of the world, different places, things are going all over the place. You've got U.S. refiners are now turning away junk silver and sterling silver scrap and jewelry. Why? Because there's plenty of the 3-9 fine stuff to melt down. So why do the lower margin, you know, copper dilute stuff? I think there's going to be fantastic deals on constitutional silver here in the States very soon if this keeps up. We've got now millions of ounces of silver is leaving the COMEX in New York. Shout out to my friend Bob Coleman at Profits Plus ID on Twitter, who you should definitely be following on Twitter. He is one of the best out there. Yesterday, 9 million ounces left the COMEX, and it is almost certainly heading to London. You can see it in the prices this morning. The New York price is rising faster than the London price. We're starting to see that gap close. But the interesting thing, at least a few minutes ago, silver was still higher in London. So even though millions of ounces are leaving the U.S. and headed for London, it's still not enough to satisfy the demand in London. The ETFs are still gobbling everything up. And so the prices are still moving a little bit higher there, which means this isn't over yet. This great reallocation that I think is going on right now as people retreat from the traditional 60-40 portfolio and put money that would typically go into bonds into things like gold and silver, could be early on in that. It could still be early here. Now, we've got Bank of America is out. They're raising their gold price target, and they're calling stagflation now. Uh-oh, that wonderful phenomenon from the 70s that anybody who lived through could tell you horror stories about. Yeah, stagflation is the simultaneous occurrence of runaway inflation and high unemployment, which the Keynesian economists have told us that's not supposed to be able to happen. Whoops, Keynes was wrong again. has a funny habit of doing that. And we've also got gold smuggling in India is on the rise, even though India lowered its import taxes on gold earlier this year to try to stem the tide of gold smuggling. Well, when prices go cuckoo, the smugglers, they look to cash in on it. So we've got that going on. Now, outside of precious metals, there is a wacky story happened in crypto yesterday. Paxos is a stablecoin issuer. They are the partner with PayPal. And yesterday, Paxos accidentally minted $300 trillion of stablecoins. Trillion with a T. Whoops, we created 300 trillion stablecoins. Inconvenience for you. Sorry about that, guys. By the way, for those who don't quite comprehend those numbers, that is more than all of the money in the world that they accidentally minted. Remember, stablecoins are supposed to be one for one backed by a U.S. dollar. Whoops, we minted $300 trillion. 20 minutes later, they fixed it. And I'm reading this story and I'm just saying, holy shit, somebody quick, hold up a pack of Mentos before people figure out what's going on there. Sorry about the $300 trillion. Here you go. Oh my God. Guys, this is why I do not trust stablecoins. If they can accidentally create $300 trillion and there are no circuit breakers in their system to prevent this from happening, it relies on some human error detection, then that means there is nothing stopping these people from creating, I don't know, $300 million and just giving it to themselves at the expense of everybody holding one of their coins. I do not trust stablecoins. Also going on this morning, we have got Taiwan Semiconductor is out reporting a huge surge in profit, 39% year-over-year increase for the biggest chip maker in the world. That is courtesy of the greatest capital destruction in the history of mankind. That is the AI mania. And that's happening just as there's a brutal op-ed in Bloomberg this morning taking down Sam Altman a peg or two over the fact that he promised us curing cancer, and instead we're getting porn slop. All right, who had porn slop in their 2020s bingo card? Meanwhile, Singapore's sovereign wealth fund is suing Chinese EV maker NIO over inflated revenues. It looks like this Chinese EV maker was channel stuffing with their batteries. We got the holiday job market here in the United States appears to be rather doo-doo this year. The number of people looking for a job far outnumbers the number of people, or the number of jobs that are available, or at least that's the rumor. We wouldn't know because we don't get any economic data. The government shutdown is in its third week. So you guys want to get your stuff together in Washington, D.C. over there? I don't know, maybe even cut spending while you're at it. Silly rabbit, cut spending. We all know what they're going to do. They're going to cut a deal where they increase spending in exchange for other increased spending. And we wonder why gold is $4,250 and climbing. Beginning to think these two things just might be related. We've got Nestle is laying off 16,000 workers, mostly white collar workers. There's that white collar recession again. And of course, the stock market just loves job destruction. That stock is way up on that news. And there's kind of a hilarious, kind of not story going on with banks and private credit. Ever since Tricolor and First Brands, we have had some finger pointing between the banks and the traditional finance and private credit, which is the non-banks, which is people pretending to be banks, even though they're not banks. What's the worst thing that could happen? Don't answer that. Well, yesterday, Jamie Dimon made a statement about cockroaches pertaining to the losses from Tricolor and First Brands. And it seems like some of the CEOs in the private credit space kind of got their panties in a bunch over that one. And they're kind of like arguing back and forth right now. And it's cute and it's funny and it's kind of hilarious until you realize the reason they're fighting is because probably hundreds of millions, maybe even billions of dollars going up in smoke, and they're going to make a mess in the bond market, and they're probably going to fail small regional banks over it. But then one day we're all going to look back on this and laugh, and it's going to be great. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button right next to it. For you new guys, come on back tomorrow because we do this every day. Come have your coffee with the Melonheads as we go through markets. And right now, looks like stocks are higher once again this morning. 30 points higher for the S&P 500, 0.46% to the upside in lieu of absolute catastrophe. Number go up. The Dow is higher by 140 6 points, 0.32% higher ahead of the open. And the NASDAQ is up 160 points, 0.2% higher. Number go up. Stocks are up across the board this morning. We've got the U.S. dollar is a little bit weaker here, down 9 basis points, 98.58 for the DXY. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields moving a little bit lower here. The 30-year Treasury, 4.624. That's off by 1.5. The 10-year yield is at 4.036. That's lower by 1 point. The 2 years at 3.497, off by almost 1 point. And even the 1 month is down, 4.088, off by 1 basis point. Further rate cuts at the end of this month seem to be virtually guaranteed at this point. Looking over at Bitcoin, we're a little bit lower once again this morning here, $111,278 for Bitcoin. They're saying it's higher by $400. We're right about where we were yesterday. The one thing I can't help but notice here around 5:30 a.m. Eastern time this morning, WTF was this. We had like a $3,000 sell-off and then an instantaneous $4,000 buyback. That little guy? Nah, I wouldn't worry about that little guy. Somebody want to tell me WTF that was? It was not the Paxos story, which was freaking hilarious, by the way. Take a look at this one. PayPal's crypto partner mints a whopping $300 trillion worth of stablecoins in a technical error. And as the Bobs would say, we fixed the glitch. So don't worry. You know, these things just sort of sort themselves out. Paxos, the blockchain partner of PayPal, mistakenly minted $300 trillion worth of the online payments giant stablecoin on Wednesday in what the company called a technical error. Market watchers had spotted the enormous injection of the PayPal PYUSD stablecoin on Etherscan, a block explorer and analytics platform for the Ethereum blockchain. Paxos had mistakenly minted the stablecoins as part of an internal transfer before it immediately identified the error and burned the excess PYUSD, the company said in a social media statement. What is this internal transfer that they were doing? They were transferring money to themselves and they accidentally made it $300 trillion? Was it supposed to be a smaller amount that nobody was supposed to notice? Just asking. This was an internal technical error. There is no security breach other than creating more money than ever existed in the blink of an eye. Customers' funds are safe. Can't help but feel a little unsafe here. We have addressed the root cause. PayPal didn't respond to an inquiry from CNBC outside of regular business hours. Transactions on Etherscan showed that the mistake had been fixed after about 20 minutes. So for 20 minutes there was $300 trillion worth of this stablecoin in circulation. Don't worry, guys. I'm sure like there's nothing to worry about here. I'm sure this we'll all just look back on this and laugh. All right, let's take a look at what the metals are doing this morning. We have got gold is higher once again. Spot gold, $42.45. That's higher by another $37 or 0.86% higher. That's your price in London. Meanwhile, the December gold futures, that's your New York price, $4,259, now $4,260. That's higher by about another $60 this morning, 1.4% higher. Gold just keeps going up in a straight line. Now, silver's pretty interesting this morning. We've got spot silver, your London price, $52.99. It's like right around flat here. It was higher by a nickel, then lower by a nickel, basically unchanged. Now, look at your silver in New York, your December silver future, $52.06. That is higher by 68.69 cents or 1.3%. So we're watching that gap in the prices start to close here. It was as high as $3 a few weeks ago or a few days ago. Now it's down under a dollar. We're seeing the New York price rise faster than the London price. Put a pin in that. We'll be back to that topic in just a second. Copper is lower by a nickel this morning. Platinum is higher once again, $1,710. We've got $1,700 for platinum here. Even the PGM metals getting in on that, 1.3% higher. Palladium making another big move, 3.3% higher, up $54 to $1,644. Guys, have I mentioned that I like the shiny? Did I forget to mention that? I like the shiny. Crude oil, meanwhile, $58.62 a barrel. That's higher by 35 cents or about 0.6%. Now, let's talk about some of these stories going on in the gold market. There's a lot of news happening around gold and silver here. This is the big one, though, this morning. Japan's top gold retailer says it can't keep up with demand. Now, typically, that would mean the prices go higher, but instead, we're just turn the machines off. That's what they're doing. Japan's largest gold retailer suspended sales of small bullion bars for at least a month, unable to meet frenzied buying interest spurred by the metal surge to record highs. Tanaka Precious Metals Group said Thursday that it has paused sales of 5 to 50 gram gold bars and platinum bars of 5 to 10 grams as demand outstrips capacity. Interesting, not just gold they're suspending, also platinum. We haven't heard much about platinum over these last few weeks, even though platinum's rally has also been rather rip your face off. Shout out again to Bob Coleman, who called that one very accurately earlier this year. But this move aims to resume in late November and will continue in the meantime to offer gold and platinum bars weighing over 100 grams. So you can still buy a 100-gram gold bar, but 100 grams, guys, that's almost 3 ounces. You're looking at, like, in U.S. prices, somewhere around $12,000 for something like that. So they're pretty much pricing out the little guys here. We are strengthening our production system with the aim of quickly resuming stable supply to customers, Tanaka said in a statement. The company is adding staff while also pausing a recycling program known as RE Tanaka at select stores. Now, there's no other color in this story about this recycling program that they're pausing. That's interesting, and it would suggest that they're no longer going to be buying gold scrap. Again, no other detail, just that they're pausing the recycling program. But that does kind of rhyme with this story we're seeing in the States where the refiners are no longer buying sterling or 90% junk silver. So, guys, it's just a mess over there. And rather than letting the price rise, they're just like, we're not going to sell it anymore. Now, I want to send a shout out to Bob Coleman. We talked about how that price change in New York this morning was much bigger than the price change in London. We got flat prices in London, but New York is up like a buck here. Well, this is why. Bob posted this one last night. Silver at COMEX depositories is exiting right on cue. Over 9 million ounces left the registered category, which backs the futures contracts. And these numbers are kind of hard to see on Twitter here, but you can see this highlighted number right here. We lost 9.1 million registered ounces of silver. That is silver with an actual paper warrant issued against it, like silver available to be delivered, down by 9.1 million ounces. That is metal headed across the pond, most likely going to London. Some may be going to India as well, but I think most of it's probably headed for London. And that's why we're seeing this New York price rise faster than the London price. The money is going where it is treated the best, as Bob Coleman says. People are buying in New York and selling it into London to try to close this arbitrage gap. And once again, that's why we're seeing a relatively tame move in your spot price in London here, but an outsized move in your New York price this morning. Also, we've got the Kobayashi letter is out with this one here. Bank of America raises its gold target to $5,000 an ounce and cites stagflation risks as the driver. Now, we had talked about that $5,000 an ounce price target. They also raised their silver price target to $65. But stagflation, guys, that is a strong word here. And I'll tell you, stagflation is just about the worst possible economic conditions you could ever find yourself in. That is where the money is losing value rapidly, causing prices of everything to rise. At the same time, people are losing their jobs and have no money, no income available to spend. It's the worst possible thing that could happen, especially for lower income families. And that is why Bank of America is raising their gold price target. Oh, don't worry. I'm sure this is great news, guys, when we see this. And by the way, look at the shape of this chart here. This vertical move, that is pretty much exactly what happened during the stagflation of the 1970s, isn't it? It's starting to rhyme a little bit. Now, it's also worth noting, guys, I am not in the business of calling a top in gold here. But when we get these big vertical moves in gold like we've had, there is typically a big sell-off and a pullback, and we end up settling at a level that was sharply higher than our starting point, but also well off the highs. We had the same thing happen following the dot-com bubble and the GFC. We had a big move higher in gold, then a little bit of a sell-off, and we settled higher than we started at, but well off the highs. I guess what I'm saying here, guys, as always, be careful on leverage. Markets are irrational right now. Everybody is freaking out. Fear permeates the markets. Regional dislocations happening. I'm not going to say we're calling a top here. We could go much, much higher, but there is a big pullback coming at some point. It could be another $2,000 higher from here, or it could be tomorrow. There's no way to handicap or to anticipate panic herd mentality. There's just no mathematical model for it. So it's just guesswork at this point. Now, there's a couple other things I wanted to touch on here. We've got central banks, worry warts, and shoppers drive gold's rally. This is kind of talking about that irrational behavior and how fear is driving this. And when people are afraid, it's hard to guess what they're going to do. Gold's breakneck rally gains momentum. The metal has surpassed $4,200 an ounce and rallied more than 5% this week. Japan's largest bullion retailer suspended sales of small bars for at least a month, unable to meet frenzied buying. Now, here's who loves gold. Almost everyone, they're saying. A not-so-quick rundown of who's buying gold. People worried about inflation. People worried about the trade war. People worried about government deficits and threats to fiat currencies. People who think the Federal Reserve is going to cut interest rates. Central banks. Shoppers in Asia. That's Japan and India and China. While not an exhaustive list, this lengthy list of buyers helps explain this year's relentless advance. The precious metal, as MLIV strategist Simon White writes today, is one of the most misunderstood assets. It is treated with contempt by many investors, a barbarous relic in the words of Keynes, an embarrassing primitive throwback to the days before the excitement of convertible bonds, SPACs, and Bitcoin. Whoops, it looks like Keynes was wrong again. Go figure. Warren Buffett called it a sterile asset, but for many buyers, that seems to be enough. Consider the motivations of two groups that have underpinned the record rally, Asian shoppers and central bankers. Central banks have been buyers of gold for the last 15 years, but the speed of their purchases doubled in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. That's when the U.S. and its allies froze Russian assets, delivering a potent message about the vulnerability of foreign currency assets to sanctions. People don't want to sit around and wait to wind up on the wrong side of an issue as the United States, and they are moving their foreign reserves into gold. And that's also causing things like gold smuggling surges in India as the price spikes before festivals. Don't need to spend too much time on this one, but this tax cut that they had in India was supposed to solve the problem. Gold smuggling into India has spiked ahead of key festivals, government and industry officials told Reuters in response to a record high price and a supply crunch. Smuggling of gold into the world's second biggest buyer of the precious metal had fallen after the government slashed import taxes on it to 6% from 15% last year. The idea was we're going to lower that import tax to get people to stop smuggling the gold. And then, of course, the price like doubles in a couple of months. Now the smugglers are right back at it. We got an interesting geopolitical commentary from Bloomberg this morning about these recent escalations in the trade war. Xi's rare earth shock gives Trump a chance to win over U.S. allies. Donald Trump's tariff war alienated long-term allies and gave China an opportunity to woo the world. Now Beijing's hardball tactics are sparking a global pushback. China's decision to unveil unprecedented export controls on the rare earth supply chain dominated meetings at an annual huddle of global economic chiefs in Washington this week. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent hinted at an emerging coalition, saying U.S. officials were speaking with our European allies, with Australia, with Canada, with India, and Asian democracies to form a fulsome response. I don't really know what a fulsome response is, but I'm sure it'll be quite fulsome. Japan's finance minister, Katsunobu Kato, called for the group of seven countries to unite and respond to China's moves, while his German counterpart touted a potential joint response of the bloc. Australia's prime minister will head to Washington next week in the hope of negotiating a deal over critical mineral supply chains as countries seek to diversify. All that marks an abrupt U-turn from 6 months ago when President Xi Jinping was rallying countries to stand together against the highest American tariffs unleashed since World War II. While China justified its latest curbs as a response to an expansion of U.S. controls, the measures demand even foreign exporters get permits to ship products anywhere in the world containing traces of a certain Chinese minerals. The biggest risk is that Chinese government overplays its hand, says Christopher Better, deputy China research director at Gavikel Dragonomics, whatever the heck that is. Disrupting global rare earth supply chains could create the impression that Beijing is inflicting pain on a wide swath of countries for no obvious reason. So we've got a little bit of, you know, the main fight here in this trade war has always been the U.S. versus China. Trump overplayed his hand when he put tariffs on freaking everybody. That drove some people into the Chinese camp. The Chinese then overplayed their hand in retaliation by putting these export controls on rare earths. That's driving some of those people back into the U.S. camp. Battle lines being drawn in the trade war, guys. It looks like Europe, Asian democracies, India, Canada, Australia, all getting together with the U.S. to counter this one from the Chinese. Meanwhile, we got this AI bubble going on. TSMC profit surges 39% to beat estimates and hit yet another record on AI chip demand. Remember, guys, the only ones making money in this AI bubble are the hardware names, and Taiwan Semiconductor supplies the hardware to the hardware suppliers, so they're making bank here. Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company on Thursday reported a 39.1% increase in third quarter profit from last year, beating estimates and hitting a fresh record as demand for artificial intelligence chips stayed strong. Recent developments in the AI market continue to be very positive, said TSMC CEO C.C. Wei. That's a lot of letters. He said that in the earnings call, adding that increasing adoption of AI models by consumers has led to more demand for compute and, by extension, semiconductor products. Is it really increasing demand, or is it circular accounting that has led to more demand for compute? But I digress. Thus, our conviction in the AI megatrend is strengthening. Yeah, the AI megatrend. Anyway, Taiwan Semiconductor up another 1.75% this morning, trading at $310. This is priced in USD, up another $5.65 here. Fantastic year for Taiwan Semi, up 52% year to date. Look at this over a five-year chart, up 245%. You can see the AI bubble there taking the price vertical. Now, speaking of the AI megatrend, we have to talk about this one, guys. This op-ed in Bloomberg from Pamrie Olsen. OpenAI's pivot to porn is problematic, but lucrative. And there's some pretty strong language. Note the change in tone in the financial press as it pertains to this AI bubble here. When you're building artificial intelligence to benefit humanity, you might have to compromise. AI is expensive, so you raise billions of dollars from investors like Microsoft, NVIDIA, and the United Arab Emirates. As you strive to build super intelligent computers that will cure cancer, you also need to make money for your backers. So after pitching your powerful chatbot technology to businesses who struggle to make it useful, your next option may be monetizing your enormous user base of 800 million weekly visitors with a sex bot. That's the ignoble trajectory of OpenAI under Sam Altman, who's made a career of justifying opportunistic business moves like inflating the AI bubble with circular deal making or releasing a TikTok clone with the promise that his tech will eventually, one day, solve intractable human problems. There's little evidence that OpenAI systems will do that, but in the short term, it can make some money, especially with erotic role play. Now, look at some of the terms here, talking about how companies, businesses are struggling to make it useful, about how Sam has inflated a bubble with circular deal making, about how all these promises might eventually solve problems, but there's no evidence of it. Look at the increasingly negative tone the market, the press is taking towards this AI bubble after years of giggling and cheering for this bubble like schoolgirls. They're finally saying what I've been saying for years, that there's no substance behind any of it. But in the meantime, we've got porn slop. Everybody have fun out there. Meanwhile, Singapore Wealth Fund sues NEO over alleged revenue inflation. Looks like a little bit of channel stuffing going on in the EV space. Singapore's sovereign wealth fund, GIC, has filed a lawsuit against Chinese EV maker NEO in U.S. court, accusing the company and top executives of inflating revenue and misleading investors. The rare legal move by GIC sent NEO shares tumbling in Hong Kong and Singapore. The complaint centers on NEO's accounting for sales to an affiliate, NEO Battery Asset, or Weining in Chinese, which allegedly bought batteries up front so NEO could book full revenue immediately, even though customers were paying gradually through subscriptions. The filing argued that such income should have been recognized gradually, not all at once. And guys, what they're talking about there, that is channel stuffing. Having a affiliate or, you know, a related party buy a whole bunch of your product that they're going to sell slowly, booking all of that as revenue up front. That's stuff in the channel right there. Chinese EV makers have been doing all kinds of sleazy stuff here. Now they're getting sued. Now, interesting, you've got Singapore suing a Chinese EV maker in U.S. court. I don't know what kind of recourse you really have in U.S. court with a Chinese company, but probably a little bit of trade war connotations going on here as well as the fact that the world just piled into this EV bubble, even though there was very little evidence to support that the market really wanted it. Meanwhile, we got more worries about the job market this morning. Job searches for the holiday season soar with full-time roles scarce. At least that's what we think it is because we're not getting any jobs data. Shut out of full-time work, many job seekers appear to be doing the next best thing and hunting for a holiday season gig, according to research from the job search platform Indeed. Searches for seasonal jobs were up 27% at the end of September compared to a year ago, and surged 50% from 2023, according to Indeed. The outsized demand from job seekers compares with only a modest 2.7% pickup in seasonal job postings from employers, suggesting even temporary holiday roles will be hard to come by. And by the way, that 2.7% pickup in job postings, if it follows trends of the last few years, those are fake job postings. Most people have expressed a lot of frustration that there's all these jobs posted. You apply for hundreds of jobs and you get no phone calls because nobody is really hiring. But look at the desperation for work. Searches for seasonal jobs up 27% over the last year, up 50% over the last 2 years. That is people desperate to find work, almost certainly predominantly younger workers. What we're seeing in the seasonal hiring market is what we're seeing in the broader market, said Corey Stahl, a senior economist at Indeed in an interview. People are going out and looking for jobs and just finding fewer of them going around. At least that's what the anecdotal data and the stories in Indeed's data would suggest, but we have no way to verify because the Bureau of Labor Statistics did not produce the non-farm payrolls report for the month of September. Meanwhile, we've got more job layoffs coming out here. This is not going to help with the holiday job search. Nestle jumps 8%. After consumer goods giant announces plans to slash 16,000 jobs, Nestle's earnings were pretty good. At least they beat expectations, but it's the layoffs that are getting all the attention here. Nestle said Thursday it will cut 16,000 jobs as the firm's new CEO, Philip Navratil, looks to accelerate a turnaround at the consumer goods giant. In a bid to improve operational efficiency, the firm said it will cut 12,000 white-collar jobs, and a further 4,000 roles will be reduced over the next 2 years. Look, white-collar recession, middle management, office dwellers, cubicle dwellers continue to get laid off. I think these layoffs are going to be predominantly in Europe. The article didn't go into the geography of these layoffs, but Nestle, I believe, is a predominantly European company. But check out the move in the stock. This market loves layoffs. Let's refresh here. Up 8.5%, $82.56. Swiss francs. This is the Swiss quote here, but it is up 8.5% on this news of cutting jobs. It's kind of the sad reality, guys. When you cut people, the stock market rewards you. It's kind of a perverse incentive. And the last one I want to talk about this morning. This story is kind of funny, kind of not. Banks and private credit clash after Diamond's cockroach barb. On Wall Street, everyone's a friendly rival until the losses start. A pair of blowups in the credit market have sparked a war of words over whether banks or private credit firms are better positioned to weather a broader downturn. Now, here's a hint. They both suck because the private credit has lent money to people who can't pay them back, and private credit got that money by borrowing it from the banks in the first place. They're all exposed to the same garbage. They just don't want to admit it. JP Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon used his bank's losses from auto lender Tricolor Holdings to say there's never just one cockroach, a quip some of his non-bank rivals have taken as a shot at them. Blue Owl Capital boss Mark Lipschultz fired back, saying the issue was in loans that banks led, so Dimon should be scouring his own books if he wants to squash more bugs. saying, Jamie, hey, your problem was you loaned the money to the private credit that loaned the money to First Brands, so it's your problem. You haven't done your DD. They're both right. They're both wrong. Lipschultz's remarks gave voice to the sentiments of a swath of private credit executives. They privately complained that sloppy diligence from banks on Tricolor and car parts supplier First Brands Group are instead being held up as evidence of growing risks enabled by newer players muscling into lending. There are people who have meaningful parochial interests in the industry not continuing to grow and succeed, Lipschultz said of the scorn heaped on private market players. Blackstone's market cap exceeds the market cap of most financial institutions in the world today. It's not as if that's not coming from someone. And of course, those people don't like it. So the private credit guy is saying, well, the banks are just jealous. It's kind of petty. This is like schoolgirls fighting here, but it's pretty interesting to see this going on. Let's see. There was some good stuff here. This week, Diamond seized on a technical dynamic that has animated credit investors and attracted bets against such vehicles by sophisticated hedge funds. In particular, many of the biggest private credit business development companies are trading at a notable discount to their net asset value, indicating that shareholders don't believe they're able to recoup their investment in full if they pulled the money. And look, these business development companies or BDCs, they have grotesquely inflated their net asset values of their company holdings. We all know they're not worth what they're claiming they're worth. That's why the stock market is dumping their stocks. They're not sitting around to find out for sure just how bad it is. Other signals of stress are flashing too, with the percentage of payment in kind in BDC portfolios, a tool to defer paying cash interest, continues to rise. Shares of Blue Owl have tumbled 27% this year, and its BDCs have languished. Blue Owl's business development company counts about 14% of its investments as PIK, or payment in kind, meaning that some or all of the interest is being deferred until maturity. Now, what that PIK means is these companies don't have the money to pay the interest on their debt. And so what they're doing is payment in kind. Oh, we can't pay you, so here's a chunk of our company instead. Oh, that's just as good as money. Don't worry, might want to hold on to that one, kind of like Dumb and Dumber with the IOUs and the suitcase full of money here. We are mispriced from a sector perspective, Blue Owl executive Jonathan Lamb said last week. The only reason that the sector should be trading off like this is if there is a massive amount of credit defaults coming, which we see no evidence of. Maybe this is Blue Owl Capital trying to defend their payment in kind. Now they're saying, oh, there's no evidence of defaults, so there's no justification for our stock to be down. Maybe the reason there's no evidence of defaults is because when the companies that owe you money don't pay, you just put them as payment in kind and you basically make excuses for them not paying instead of putting them in default. You see the problem here? This is why the net asset value of these companies isn't worth what these companies claim. Because the companies don't make money and they're not paying back their debt, but the people who loan them the money are afraid to foreclose on them. So they're just doing payment in kind while saying, we don't see any defaults. Oh yeah, no defaults here. We can't see anything. Yeah, just close your eyes and all of a sudden you can't see them. As always, guys, be very careful in these names. I think there is a reckoning coming in private equity and private credit. And I just want to say thank you very much. Wow. Look at this one from Grandpa. Thank you, Grandpa, for the generosity. Appreciate the red one, sir, very much. He says, may the Lord heal Itz and speed her recovery. Itz is in reference to our moderator, Nan, who has been unwell for the last couple of weeks. Nan, we miss you very much. Please get ready better soon. Grandpa, thank you so much for the generosity and for the thoughts and prayers for Nan. Nan, speedy recovery, please. Melonheads are wonderful people, by the way. Thomas Owen says, well, first of all, Thomas, owing you a debt of gratitude. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. He says the average portfolio has 0.5% allocation to gold. Oh, my God, that is low. If that goes up to just a quarter of what Morgan Stanley is recommending, that's 10x from what it is now. You're right here, Thomas. First of all, thank you for that data point. I had no idea how underexposed to gold the average portfolio was. I knew it was low. I knew most it was nothing, but the average is just 0.5%. Wow. Now imagine if 60-40 bonds and stocks and bonds becomes 60-20-20 stocks, bonds, and gold. If we go from an average of 0.5% to an average of 20%, how many trillions of dollars of liquidity flowing into the gold market is that? And what does the price do? Maybe some of you quants out there can tell me. I won't even try to guess how high gold could go in that situation. And right now we're headed that way. I don't know if it will continue. We're talking mob mentality, a stampede into gold. How long will a stampede happen? How long will it take to stop? I don't know of a mathematical formula for calculating that. But if it goes on, then $4,250 gold will look low based on where this could go. Thank you for that data point and for the support of the channel, Thomas. Wow, only 0.5%. Hunt and Cover, thank you, sir, for the generosity. Appreciate the super chat. And it is good to have you back as well, sir. He says, get some shiny jack. I hear tinfoil has zero premium. Yep, we haven't seen the FOMO in the tinfoil market just yet. But I don't think you need the tinfoil hat to imagine gold could continue to rally here. All the reasons propelling gold higher, the government's fiscal recklessness, central banks, monetary debasement, none of those problems are getting any better. All of those problems are getting worse. And so gold could continue going here. And if you ask me, this rally in gold is just long overdue. Gold is just catching up to where it should have been all along, not like running vertical. And, you know, look, guys, we've all sat and watched these speculative asset bubbles. We've watched cryptos, like Fartcoin went to multi-billion dollar market caps. We watched the AI bubble go to ridiculous proportions, $4.5 trillion, almost $5 trillion of market cap on a freaking accounting scam, private equity valuations blowing away. Who's going to look at all of those manias and how ridiculous they got and then look at the gold chart and say gold is at a top? How do you say gold is at a top? I mean, you can't even call a top and all this other bullshit that we all know is worthless at this point, and yet everybody's just kind of pretending it's still worth that. How do you look at gold and call a top? I'm not even going to try. Thank you very much, Hunt and Cover. Thank you for the good vibes and for the tinfoil hat opportunity. Appreciate that very much. Uncle Fetster says, happy birthday to my man, Metal Seer. Happy birthday, Metal Seer. Did not realize it was your birthday, sir. Happy birthday to you. And thank you, Uncle Fedster, for being a Melonhead member for 19 months, for supporting the channel, and for sharing the good vibes this morning. Dan Hedin, what's going on, brother? He says, Costco Online has been out of gold and silver for weeks. Thanks, Jack. Now, is that may be your local Costco. I was talking to a viewer yesterday who said there was some gold available at Costco, but that the premium, I think it was 150 over spot for the Costco gold bars. So I think that might be a local situation, Dan, and may not be a national one. Don't quote me on that because the Costco page is not something that I typically check, but I am seeing premiums rise and I am starting to see certain items go out of stock. And of course, all the anecdotes I got yesterday from people in other countries, Canadians who can't find metals, Australians can't find kangaroos, the situation in Japan, the ETFs in India, people in the UK can't get Britannias. So there are physical small denomination metal shortages in places of the world right now, just not where I am. It's all, there's plenty of metal where I am. Thanks again, Dan, for supporting the channel. Steve Wojtas says, are buyers starting to outpace sellers in retail precious metals? If so, we could see premiums start to increase. In some things, like for American Silver Eagles, I am seeing the premiums start to increase. In other things, like junk silver, 90%, I'm seeing the premiums go even lower. You can already get junk silver below spot, and I'm seeing going further into the negatives now that the refiners aren't getting it. So there's no one-size-fits-all answer here, Steve. I can tell you, if you're in the market for a physical metal here, it really pays to shop around right now. There are some fantastic deals out there and some not-so-fantastic deals. So it pays to shop around, and it depends on your location. But I am starting to see the FOMO for retail start up. We're seeing enthusiasm return in the States, although it's still somewhat subdued. I think in the States, it's still a seller-dominated market, hence the refiners not taking the junk silver. UK, Australia, Canada, Japan, though, the buyers are absolutely in control there. The FOMO has set in. So no one-size-fits-all answer here. The market is tearing itself apart. We've got wildly different conditions in different parts of the world for the same product. And I honestly don't know what to make of it. It's hard to guess. I've never seen anything like this. And most of the people who have been doing this a lot longer than me have never seen anything like this before. I don't know of anybody who has seen anything like this. Thanks again for supporting the channel, Steve. And Chris Bott, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. He says, Ben Bernanke, Tim Geithner, and Janet Yellen have matching. I like the tramp stamp. Oh, my God. I just threw up in my mouth a little bit. Oh, those are some deep thumb holders. Oh, sorry, guys. It's a family show. I didn't mean to go there. Guys, I try to do like the improv and the spontaneous thing. This is a live show. I have no time to rehearse. Who the hell could anticipate a comment like that? So let me just say, I like the shiny. And if you want to see my tattoos, my phone number is probably written on the wall of a bathroom stall at a truck stop somewhere in Sheboygan. All right. I'm sure there's a story behind that one, Janet. We'll have to leave that for another time, though, because this is a live show and we got to move on. Chris, what the hell, mate? Thank you for supporting the channel. Gordon Guanu. Yeah, this has been a batshit live show. Let's go to Mr. Guanu. He says, tinfoil hat. Am I crazy to worry that retail is being herded into metals so big players can dump the price via paper ounces? I just don't trust them. Well, that... you're right to not trust. All right. I think there is no place for trust in finance. So you are right to maintain that questioning attitude and that skepticism that is healthy. Hold on to that, but don't let it paralyze you. Easier said than done, by the way. Now, are we being herded right now? To be honest with you, the paper guys are being forced to pay up in order to get the metal from the physical guys, right? In 2021, during the first silver squeeze, we all piled into this stuff. And the idea was if we buy all of this, there won't be enough of the big bars available for the paper guys to manipulate the price. Whether that does happen or not, it's up to your personal opinion. So we bought all this. Now, the problem is the industry got predatory. They jacked up the premiums. And so a lot of the money we spent on this didn't actually go to driving the paper price higher. It went to inflating the profit margins of metal dealers. What we're seeing now is a complete reversal of that trade. Now the paper guys are out of metal, as was the goal in 2021, and they're having to bid up the price in order to get us to part with this so that they can melt it down into those big 1,000-ounce bars and sell them and deliver them on the exchange. So honestly, right now, I think the stackers have the big guys by the cojones more so than the other way around. That could change, and look, big money tends to prey on little money. So, like, the one thing I would say, and I had this conversation with Gigi yesterday, buy physical metal to save. Do not buy, unless you're really sophisticated and you spend all day studying the intricacies of the market, don't buy this for a trade or even for an investment. Buy this as a savings vehicle. Set it and forget it. That is a reason to buy something like this. Unless you're really devoting a lot of time to trading the physical, because the premiums are so high. If you're trying to day trade stuff like that, you're just going to get eaten alive by premiums and end up losing money. So it's more of a vehicle for saving than anything else. If you do want to trade, there's ETFs and you can go out on leverage and all those other things. There's ways to make levered bets and, you know, make big gains if it goes your way, but also see your money go up in smoke if it goes the other way. That's when the big losses pile up. If you get too creative and you start like YOLOing into zero DTE call options on SLV, some days you're going to make money, other days you're going to get wiped out. So just be careful on leverage, Gordon. I know that was probably a long-winded non-answer, but I'm doing my best here, brother. Nacho Man Randy Savage says, great chat yesterday, Jack. Thank you so much, Nacho Man. I appreciate that. Great chat today as well. You guys are awesome. Shout out to all my melon heads in the live chat who show up morning after morning. Love you guys. Mike Kaufman, the big MK. Thank you for the generosity, sir. He says, I got into silver because underinvestment into mines. Okay, miners are doing really well here. Some big moves in the mining stocks recently. Rick Rule says, buy what is hated. Do you think we will see the same thing in oil in a couple of years? No advice, LOL, just your take. All right, I think oil is in for, in the short term, a lot of pain. I think the supply glut narrative is continuing to get worse. When I see stories about a lot of oil on the water, you're starting to read articles about that. That's oil sitting on tankers with nowhere to go. They're trying to sell it in the spot market, but the prices in the spot market are down. That is indicative of an oversupplied market. And all of the talking points from OPEC right now suggest the oversupplied market will become increasingly oversupplied. They're going to pump more oil. While that is going on, despite pullbacks in some of the stocks and despite layoffs in the oil patch, U.S. production is also continuing to rise. So we got prices heading lower, but supply is still going up, and it's starting to pile up on the water. So that tells me short-term oil going lower. That being said, if we get oil down, you know, like in the 40s or the low 30s, that is definitely a buying opportunity. It never stays there long. So that is my take on oil. For now, I think lower is the direction. Thank you, Mike Kathman. Eric says, where is my Middle East peace dividend check? The check is in the mail. I mean, yeah, we've had peace in the Middle East, but the last I checked, Hamas is now fighting with other Palestinians in the Gaza Strip because I guess Hamas wants to maintain control, but some of these other groups are like, no, we're done with you, Hamas. So the killing is still happening in that neighborhood. It's just different people doing the killing. So maybe that's why you got no peace dividend check, because there ain't no peace. Guys, that part of the world has been at war for thousands of years. I don't think that's going to stop Tuesday. Sadly, I wish it wasn't true, but it seems to be the way of things. Anyways, thank you, Eric, for being a Melonhead member for 14 months. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm on your way out. Thank you so much, guys, for the generosity and the super chats. I really appreciate that. As well as you, my magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon and YouTube. Thank you, guys, for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.